Over the last few weeks, we have been looking at the subject of trust and what trust looks like, how trust develops. We're going to talk about in the next couple of weeks what happens when trust gets broken in a relationship. You know, you get betrayed by something or someone. What do you do about that? So that's what we've been talking about, is the idea of trust. Here's a definition from Paul David Tripp that I've been using about trust. These things will be up on your screen. It says, trust is being so convinced that you can rely on the integrity, strength, character, and faithfulness of another that you are willing to place yourself in his or her care. And this thing called trust, it plays out in a whole bunch of different areas in life. So let me just mention real quickly some different things. Like there is an idea that I have someone in my life, or you have someone in your life, who you would say there's emotional trust between them, that you can share your feelings with them and they're going to handle those feelings correctly. Does that make sense? Because there's other people that you would maybe extend your feelings to, and afterwards you're like, what? You know, they like, because it's that's not what I expected. That's not where I intended this to go. So it's this idea of emotional trust. Or there's ones in regards to just practical trust. I believe you're going to follow through on what you say you're going to do. Our first youth pastor years and years and years ago, decades ago, our first youth pastor, I did a little bit of marriage counseling with them while they were on staff. And one of the issues was that our youth pastor could not remember to do what his wife asked him to do. So this is pre-cell phone days, you know, kind of thing. They had one car, and she would call him on the landline during the day, and she'd say, before you come home, stop by the grocery store and get whatever it happened to be to get the grocery store. And he'd pull into the driveway, and he'd get out of the car, and he'd go in the house, and it wasn't there. And it didn't just happen once. It happened so many times that she began to trust that he wasn't going to do what he said he was going to do. Right? You know, it's like, and so there's this reality, this just practical trust, that if you say you'll do something, you're going to do it. That's one of the applications of trust. Or just the idea of, I've called it confidentiality trust. That's the idea that you share something with someone else and you anticipate, your anticipation is that they're going to hold what you share in confidentiality. They're not going to tell other people about it, or they're not going to what? Gossip about it. And that's what we hold, is this confidentiality thing. There's also in regards to what might be called situational trust. And that's where I believe in the situation I'm in right now, the situation we're in right now, I'm fully trust that this person is going to be there in the middle of this thing we're going through. It's a family death, it's a, you know, business crisis, whatever it happens to be, that person is going to be there in that time period and for you. The idea, you know, kind of sits similar, but the idea of just physical trust, or you might call it presence, that person's going to actually be there for me. You know, they're not going to be, you know, somewhere else whenever the situation comes about, whatever it happens to be. And we can recognize how important trust is, and when we recognize how important trust is, then it becomes more and more important to us on how do we develop trust, and then how do we protect trust? Because we've all been betrayed. We all know what it looks like to have someone, you know, break a trust. And so how do you steward that? How do you hold on to that trust, and how do you strengthen it between two people and so on? So that's what we're going to look at. And here's the passage I've been working from the NIV. I'll give it to you in the New Living Translation in a couple minutes. It says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. And it's just, that's as clear as it can be. If you can be trusted with a little bit, then someone's going to trust you with a lot. If you can't be trusted with a little, someone's not going to give more trust to you for whatever it happens to be. I mean, it's just that simple. You know, going back to parenting, you know, there were times in our growing up raising five kids where one of them would go, hey, can I borrow the car? And I would say to them, no, you can't borrow the car because last time you borrowed the car, you didn't come home on time. Or you weren't where you were supposed to be, whatever that happened to be. And so it's like, I couldn't trust you with that little, so I'm not going to give you more. Okay? I mean, we know this. Everybody knows this. I mean, you're kind of, if someone we trust doesn't do what they say they're going to do, it's foolish of us to extend that trust again until they've proven that they can be what? Trustworthy, that they can be trusted. I've been using this illustration. This quote, and there's a kind of a combination of things happening, and those of you that have been here the last couple of weeks, you know what I'm going to talk about. But this idea of trust being a bridge grabbed a hold of me a couple of months ago. And here's the quote, and again, I told you I couldn't find it, where it came from. I still haven't been able to find it. But trust is a gentle, essential bridge built slowly through honesty, patience, mutual respect, connecting two hearts, and enabling deep emotional security. So I'm using a bridge as an illustration of what trust is, okay? And I'm using the Brooklyn Bridge. And some of you, again, you've heard me talk about this the last couple of weeks, but I'm going to use it again today. And the Brooklyn Bridge, I think there's a picture of it. It'll be up there coming up. So this connects Manhattan to Brooklyn. And is what it connects, and it's called the Brooklyn Bridge. And it was built it started in 1870, finished in 1884, took 14 years to build it. And I've been using this as an illustration. The roadway, what you can imagine, the cars go across, which thousands of cars every day go across this bridge. The roadway is the trust. You know, it's like if there's going to be a relationship between me and Sharon, a healthy relationship, there has to be trust. I have to cross across the bridge of trust. She has to cross back across the bridge of trust. That's how it works. So then I'm talking about, and I'm not sure if I left the slide in there, but there on each side of this bridge, there's what are called an anchorage. And it's where these giant cables, go back to the previous picture. You see those giant cables? So it's where those cables are connected. And the anchorages are about the size of this room. The plate that they're anchored in is about the size of this stage and the same height as this stage. Giant steel anchorages. And the anchorage of trust is honesty. If you don't have honesty on that side, and you don't have honesty on that side, you cannot have a bridge of trust. Trust is completely dependent upon honesty. Now, it doesn't mean that that's the only thing it's dependent upon, but if you don't have honesty, you can't really have this thing called trust. Last week, I talked about those two towers. Those two towers, when they were built in the 1880s, they were the tallest structures in the United States, 24 stories tall, and there's two of them, one on the Manhattan side, one on the Brooklyn side, and last week used the illustration that these two towers are what hold up the idea of trust. They're what holds up the cable that I'm going to talk about today. They hold up the cable. And those two towers are character. Because someone can tell the truth, but if they lack character, you really can't trust them. I mean, all of us have people in our lives, or have had people in our lives, if we stop and think about it, who have told us the truth, but they lack character, and we didn't trust them. So it's not just, trust is not just built on honesty. You have to have honesty, but it's not just built on honesty, okay? So now, today, what I'm going to talk about is the cables, okay? And just really, we're just one idea on the cable. These cables that are the giant cables you can see, there's four of them. They go all the way from the anchorage on one side to the anchorage on the other side. They're 16 inches round. There's 5,200, Roebling, who created this bridge. He designed this bridge in his mind, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago. He designed it in his mind, put all the drawings down on paper, all the diagrams down on paper, all the building plans, all of it in 90 days. And then he died and wasn't able to be involved in the building of the bridge. So then his son took over building the bridge, Washington Roebling's, And Washington got sick from what we call the bends today, multiple times of having the bends. He got sick, and he had an apartment where he could see the bridge being built, but his wife taught herself bridge building, and his wife was the one, boots on the ground, overseeing the building of this bridge. So those cables are 16 inches around, 5,200 wire, and he's the one that designed and invented these wire ropes. 5,200, you know, strands in there, and the strands are all bound together, 90 to a cable, in a sense, and then they're all bound together to make these 16-inch cables that go across the towers, and those original cables have never been replaced. They've been in there since 1880, and they've never been replaced. And I don't even know how you would replace them, but they've never been replaced. And all of the other cables, so go ahead and go to the next slide. All of the other cables have been replaced. And the last time they did a major replacement was in the early 1980s. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. Because trust, what holds up the roadway, go back to the previous slide. What holds up the roadway is not the roadway. It's the cables that hold the thing up. And so there's the main cables, and then go to the next slide. There's this whole web working of cables that hold the roadway up and keep it where it's at. And throughout the year, the bridge bed, the road bed, stretches between 14 and 16 inches, depending upon the weather. So it has that ability to, you know, expand and contract, and it's all based on those cables. Well, trust is not just about honesty. It's built of a bunch of other stuff. It has a bunch of different components to it. Like, here's some of the components. So if everybody's following me, trust, it's the roadway, but what holds the roadway up is these cables of all of these other aspects, and they're all woven together to make this thing that enables trust to exist between people, or between people in an organization, or between an organization and an organization, however you look at trust. So let me give you some ideas of what these things are woven together. Like being responsible. Someone can tell you the truth, but if they're not responsible, you just don't have trust. You know, it's not able to be there. Or how about which I mentioned before, of confidentiality. Solomon said this. He said, a gossip goes around telling secrets, but those who are trustworthy can keep a confidence. I mean, probably, again, most of us in this room, if not all of us, have had a situation where we told someone something and they told people, and you're like, why would you ever do that? And what it ends up happening is we stop telling them those kinds of things. We're just not doing it again. Because that was not meant for other people to know. If I wanted other people to know, and one of the things that happens is it breaks trust. But it also, if you stop and think about it, if I tell someone something, and then someone tells me something, Sharon tells me something, and then I turn around over here and I say to her what Sharon told me, if she's got any brains about her, she's going to go, okay, I wonder what they're saying behind my back, right? Okay, because if this was supposed to be confidential and I didn't hold it confidential, I blabbed it, okay? And then all of a sudden now, if she has any brains, she's going to go, okay, he told me that was supposed to be confidential. What's he telling other people about me? And it just breaks the whole trust thing. Yeah, I mean, it's broken it this way, but it's also broken it this way. So the trust between Char and I is broken. Does this all make sense? So that's part of it. Or how about, again, being present? And in the world we live in today, it is so hard to be present. Where is my phone? I gave my phone to Greg. Greg, I'm glad, or my wife's got it. I don't know, somebody's got my phone. Yeah, she's holding up my phone. See, I'm present because I don't have my phone in my hand. But you guys all know what I'm talking about. You know, where you're there in a room with someone, and like if you're in a meeting, and many of us have been in meetings where the phone, you know, all of a sudden the phone starts making noise and someone, like, they're paying attention to their phone. Like, wait a second, we're all right here and you're paying attention to that phone. You know, there's whole movements right now when friends go out to dinner that they put the phone in a basket or a bag and they're sitting at a restaurant, and if someone touches that, grows and grabs that phone, they have to pay the bill. It's all a movement. It's this thing happening to try and say, no, you be here. If you're here, you be here. You don't be here and over there. Okay? Because it's hard to trust people when you're there and they're there, but they're there. It's just hard to trust them. So that's part of what makes up trust. Or how about being humble? I don't know about you, but it is really hard for me to trust an arrogant person. It's just really hard to trust an arrogant person. There's something that happens where you just like... Or how about being nice? Being kind and being nice. You know, the scripture says so much about being kind and being nice. One of the things we know about Jesus was Jesus went about what? Doing good, and he described himself as being gentle and kind. Maybe I'm a little bit weird here, but I find it hard to trust a mean person. Because I don't know where they're going to come from. I don't know when they're going to bite me. You know, you just don't know. So kindness makes up part of it. Or communicating clearly and communicating early and communicating often. Or listening. You know, that listening plays a part in this whole thing of trust. Being observant, trying to understand what's going on in their life. Moral courage, serving, integrity, you know, rigorous thinking, all those kinds of things. There's just all these things that make up this thing that enables trust to go between two people. But let me just talk about one idea today. It's one idea, and it's the word consistency. Being consistent. Okay? The word, the scriptures might use, you know, would use the word in this place. They would use, the scriptures would use the word faithful. So here's what one of the passages goes again. This is Jesus, but this is from the New Living Translation. He says, if you are faithful in little things, or if you are consistent in little things, you will be consistent in large ones. But if you're dishonest or inconsistent in little things, I'll put that word in there that I'm using. If you're inconsistent in little things, you won't be consistent with greater responsibilities. Just this whole idea of being consistent. And I see a lot of shaking your head. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Something happens when someone in your life is consistent. You can trust them. You know how they're going to react. You know what their response is going to be. And actually, when it doesn't happen, you are surprised. It's not like you're surprised when they do something. It's like you're surprised when they don't do what they consistently and regularly do. Consistency creates trust. Go back to the passage we were looking at last week of Joseph. And if you weren't here or you're not familiar with the story, so Joseph was one of, you know, a dozen boys. He's the youngest. His older brothers don't like him because he had this, you know, dream and a vision, and he thought he was going to rule the family. So the brothers actually hate him. They're out taking care of the sheep out in the field, and the sheep and goats out in the field. Joseph is sent by his dad to go out and check on the boys. They see him coming, and they go, let's kill him. So they decide, let's kill him. The oldest brother says, no, let's not kill him. Let's put him in this pit and let, you know, wild animal will get him, whatever it happens to be. But let's not do it with our own hands. You know, let's not kill him with our own hands. And then he's in the pit. And then, so he's, down in the ground. And then they see these Midianite traveling traders coming, and they're on their way to Egypt. And so one of them says, oh, you know what? Let's sell him. We can go back with some money. So they take a garment and they shred it all up and they cover it with blood. But they sell it to the Midianite traders. He gets sold in Egypt as a slave. They put a harness around his neck, or a, what's the word I'm looking for? A collar around his neck. And they tied, you know, chains on his legs, and they hauled, you know, walked him all the way, the rest of the way to Egypt. They get to Egypt. They put him on the slave block. He's bought by Potiphar to be a household servant. Potiphar's like one of the premier generals in the Pharaoh's army. And so he starts working in the house, and he becomes so admired because he's trustworthy and he's consistent. He does what needs to be done. He just does it every day. He does it no matter what the circumstances are. He's consistent, and consistency, let me use three words to make up consistency. He's reliable, he's dependable, and he takes his responsibility seriously. So even the cable, you know, I'm talking about this, you know, the cable of, that holds up trust, but even the cable of consistency is made up of three other little wires. It's made up of being reliable, dependable, and taking responsibility seriously. And that's what he does. And then, again, the story we looked at last week is he, you know, Potiphar's wife finds him attractive. He's, you know, he's a well-built man, a young guy, and she wants to sleep with him. She's like, no, 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 get away, get away, get away, get away, get away, get away. And he runs, he tries to stay away from her as often as he can. And one day she went for him day after day after day. And he just avoided her as best he could. And then one day, he's in the house, and it's her and him, and she tries to grab him, and he's got his garment on, and he runs away. And as he runs away, she holds onto his garment, so he runs away without the garment. And then she yells rape. So he ends up in prison, is where he ends up, is in prison. And for his, you know, non-crime. And here's how it says. It says, Potiphar was furious when he heard his wife's story about how Joseph had treated her. So he took Joseph and he threw him into prison where the king's prisoners were held. And there he remained. But the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. Before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. And the Lord was with him and caused everything he did to prosper. So the warden, you know, he gives him this little job to do. And he's responsible with it. So then he gives him another job. Then he gives him another job. Then he gives him another job. And he's reliable. He's dependable. He takes his responsibilities seriously. He's consistent. And he just, next thing you know, he's like, I'm going to put my feet up on the desk and take the day off. Some of you know, I have a brother who's been in prison most of his life, off and on. And right now, we think he's in prison in Alabama. The last crime he did was extorted $600,000 from a building company. And that's the last we knew. I mean, I could show you pictures of arrest warrants and so on. One time, years ago, Barbara and I drove my parents to South Dakota when he was in the state penitentiary in South Dakota to visit my brother, thinking it might be the last time my parents get a chance to visit him. And we drove out, you know, all the way to South Dakota and spent the night and then went to the prison the next day, and there's a whole lot to it. But we sat there in the prison in the waiting room, the visiting room. It's kind of a large auditorium, and there were tables, and you just go in and sit down. And we sat there while I was just so sad for me, and even worse for my dad. But we sat there for 2 hours as my brother just told one story after another, how he was running the prison, you know, carpentry department, and they were out on work release and building homes and, you know, all of these kinds of things. And he just told these stories. Joseph wasn't telling a story. Joseph was reliable. He proved himself reliable. He was dependable. He was consistent. And then next thing you know, he is actually in charge of all of these things. Joseph created what we call oftentimes a track record. You know, we say that. We go, man, they have a track record of building homes the way the homes need to be built. They have a track record of, you know, whatever it happens to be. We say about people, they have a track record. We can depend upon them because we know their track record. And that's what Joseph did. Joseph created this track record, and it came about by, again, one little thing after another of being reliable, dependable, responsible, and so on. Solomon, again, back in Proverbs, Solomon says this, many will say they are loyal friends, but who can find one that is truly reliable? A trustworthy friend is someone who is reliable. They're dependable. You know, it's the person, not the person who says I have your back, but the person that what? Has your back. Oh, I'll be there for you. I'll be there for you. And then you're like, they weren't there. You know, that, and again, I see enough reaction that you know what I'm talking about. Solomon said, who can find a truly reliable? Who can find a dependable? Who can find a consistent? Who can find a friend who's going to take things responsible? And if you have a friend in your life or some friends in your life that are reliable, dependable, take responsibility, and they're consistent, cherish it with everything you have. Because it is a gift. It is not to be taken lightly. And on the other side, you need to let Jesus do a work in your life that you will become a friend who is dependable, reliable, takes responsibility seriously, and is consistent. Y'all with me? Because we want someone like that in our life. But are we willing to let Jesus do that in us so we become that for other people? Okay? And that's part of where we're headed at the very end here. Paul described it this way. Paul said, and he's talking about in the famous chapter of 1 Corinthians 13, which is used at weddings and so on. He said, love never gives up. Love never loses faith. It's always hopeful, and it endures through every circumstance. That consistency builds trust. When you're consistent, it's the thing. Bernard Clive says this. He says consistently delivering on your promise reinforces trust. Consistently delivering on your promise reinforces trust. I would say it even beyond that. I would say constantly delivering on your promises builds trust. And then reinforces the trust. So it's like it builds that cable, reliable, dependable, taking responsibility. You build that cable of confidence or of consistency, and then it's wrapped around. Not only do you get it built by those things, but then it's wrapped around and reinforced by consistent. Doing what you know you should be doing. And if someone has a track record of dependability, you trust them. But if someone has a track record of being irresponsible or undependable, you don't trust them. I mean, they say they will be there for you, but you know because of their track record they won't be there for you, so you don't depend upon them. You're like, oh, depend on me, depend on me. And inside you're going, yeah, not going to happen. Y'all with me? I think of the sports world, Cal Ripken Jr. Some of you don't know that name, but those of you that are old enough know the name, Cal Ripken Jr. Baltimore Orioles, and consistently, I looked it up, make sure I had the number right, 2,632 consistent games. 2,632 consistent games. I mean, I think it's something to be consistent, you know, like every Sunday for a year as the pastor. But to be consistent for 2,632 games. And he could have gone more games, but he took himself out of that last game. He said, you know, I've had a good run, kind of where I'm going to end this run. Still holds the record. It says of Jesus, it says this of Jesus, and one of the reasons Jesus was so trusted by the average person is because he was consistent. It's one of the reasons the average person trusted him. And it's 70 different times Jesus said to the people, I'm telling you the truth. 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 And he told them the truth. He was consistent. And he was consistent in the way he reacted to the marginalized people. People, just the everyday people, he was consistent on how he treated them, how he acted towards them, how he reacted towards them, and he was also consistent in the way he reacted and acted towards religious leaders. I mean, he constantly got in their face. Like, you guys are a brood of vipers, snakes. You are like whitewashed tombs. You look all pretty on the outside, but inside you're full of death. I mean, he was consistent. Not fun stuff, but he was consistent in the way he treated religious leaders. But you won't find him saying any of those kinds of things to the average everyday person. He was consistent in the way he treated the everyday. I mean, he touched the lepers, the woman who touched his garment that had the bleeding issue, the woman caught in adultery, Zacchaeus up in the tree, the man that they dropped down the roof, you know, pulled the roof open and dropped it down so he could heal him. You just go one story after another. Jesus was consistent. He was reliable. He was dependable. And he took responsibility seriously. And it created this thing. He was consistent. That's why people trusted him. And that's what Jesus wants to create in our lives. That we can be people who are trusted because we do what we say we're going to do. And we do it reliably, we do it dependably, and we do it with taking responsibility seriously, and it creates a consistency in us. One of the worst things, I believe, one of the worst things that someone who's not a person of faith could say about a person of faith is they're not trustworthy. I think it's one of the worst things that someone could say. Because if Jesus was so consistent that everyone trusted him, if he was so consistent, if he was so dependable, if he was so reliable, if he took his responsibility so seriously that everyone trusted him, isn't that what should be happening in our lives as followers of Jesus? Think about parenting. I mean, research, the results of research are overwhelming how important consistency in parenting is. I mean, if there's one thing that means as much as anything else, it's, is a parent consistent with their children? You know, things in like, is their attitude consistent? It's, you know, you'll hear adults say about, talked about presence a little while ago. You'll have adults who will say, you know, they get to be adults and they'll say, my dad was there for me. My mom was there for me. Okay? And when they say that, he was there for me. That one of the reasons they say it as adults because it spoke volumes into their life of how important they were by the consistency of being there for the child. Just that consistency. All, you know, responses were consistent, expectations were consistent. And again, it's one of the things I talk about and we talk about around the school is, you know, if you have, if you're a teacher around our school, one of the things that Brenda spends a lot of time, all the teachers do, is to be as consistent as we possibly can be. So then a kid doesn't have to go, okay, I'm in class today. Is this a day A rules or is this a day B rules? Like, I'll just use as an illustration. Is this a day where you can sit on the table, or is this a day where you can't sit on the table? And one day you let them sit on the table, and then the next day you discipline them for sitting on the table. The kid's going, okay, what is the rule around here, and which day is which day? Does that make sense? So, like, to be as consistent as a teacher can be. Because when they're consistent, it builds trust between that student and the teacher. Y'all with me? It's just how it works. Consistency creates stability. And inconsistency breaks trust. And here's the thing. Some of you have heard me say it because I've said it to you personally. Trust gets broken in $100 bills. You know, you got this trust relationship. Again, I'll pick on Sharon because she's in the front row. Between Sharon and I, there's a trust relationship. And then I do something stupid. I just burned a $100 bill. That's how fast trust can get broken. But in order to rebuild that trust, I rebuild it in pennies and nickels and dimes. And if I do what I should do between the two of us in a whole year, I've only put $3.65 back into the jar of $100 of trust I lost. If I do it in nickels, if I could do nickels, it's $18.50. If I do it in dimes, it's still only $37. At the end of the year, I'm still $63 in the hole. I mean, again, it's one of the reasons we should treat trust in relationships, in your marriage, with your kids, with your brothers and sisters, with people around the church. It's one of the reasons you should treat trust so kindly and so rigorously, is because it is so easy to lose and so hard to gain back once you've lost it. And some people would say, you never really get back to where you were before. You never get back there. Again, even if you do everything right, even if you try like, oh, I'm gonna make this all right, and I'm gonna do everything, that you may not get back there. So don't take, I didn't realize the time. Don't take trust for granted. Got on a roll here and didn't pay attention to the clock. We'll end with this. Don't take trust for granted. Do not take trust for granted. Work as hard as you possibly can to let Jesus work trust into your lives. The ability, trustability into your life. So the question actually becomes, Sarah, why don't you come? We're gonna close with a song. The question becomes, because Jesus wants to build consistency in our lives. He wants to build reliability. He wants to build dependability. He wants to build taking responsibility seriously. The question becomes, will we cooperate with him as he tries to create that in our life? It's not something, none of us were born with consistency. None of us were, when we gave our lives to the Lord and, you know, gave him control of our lives, we did not instantly have consistency in our lives. It's something he creates over time in our lives. Through good, through hard, through rough things, he builds consistency. And the question then becomes, will I allow the Holy Spirit to create consistency in me? Will I allow that to happen? Let's stand together. And I hope that as we sing this song, maybe there's some area the Lord's, you know, because we're not all consistent in every area of our life. I mean, some of us could say, well, I'm consistent in that area. Pfft, not in that area, right? But will we cooperate as the Lord wants to create consistency in our life? Just give yourself a moment to think on that, to, you know, consider that. After we start singing this song, some of our prayer team is going to be up here front. They would love to pray with you, even about this issue. If this is an issue that's needed. Or maybe it's a financial thing you're going through, or maybe a health thing you're going through, a relationship thing, whatever it happens to be. You come, let them pray with you. We believe God answers prayer. So you come, let them pray with you. Go ahead, Sarah.